Welcome to the Single Greatest Choice podcast, where single women find support, empowerment, information, and inspiration around the topics of singleness, fertility, motherhood, and mindset. I'm your host, Katie B., and I'm thrilled to be back for a second season to share more stories of women like you and me who are navigating these choices, along with interviews with experts in the fields of fertility preservation, coaching, and psychology. Whether you're just starting to question what to do about your finite fertility, or whether you're ready to make the leap into solo motherhood by choice, I hope these conversations will help you to feel more supported and confident along the way. Because whatever you decide to do with these years could be the single greatest choice you'll ever make, and you don't have to make it alone. Hi, listeners. It is an exciting week. A goal of mine since I started this podcast was to bring you stories of women who became mothers through foster and adoption. And this week's guest, Lindsay, is going to share with us her experience of connecting with her son through the foster care system in the Los Angeles area. Lindsay shares so much wisdom and experience and positivity, and I just couldn't be more thrilled to bring her story to you. So enjoy the show, and thanks so much for listening. Hi, Lindsay. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Katie. Thanks for having me.
I have been trying to get someone who has information and experience in fostering and adoption since really the beginning of the podcast, and you are the first one who has been here on the show. So I'm so thrilled to have you.
Oh, I'm excited to talk about the process and my journey to get here.
Yeah. And we'll just jump right in with your story, wherever you want to start.
So I grew up in the suburbs of Richmond, Virginia. I have an older sister. My parents are still together. And from a very, very young age, I always very cognizant that kids didn't have a life like mine. And I used to just pray at night, God, please give every kid in the world a life like mine. I grew up with a lot of love and family members, the biological and godparents who became, we like to call them our adoptive grandparents. Growing up, I always knew I wanted kids. I would tell people that I wanted 10 kids or more, how many ever my husband would let me. I think that was my rolling mantra for a long time, right?
That's awesome.
Being Southern, part of every Southern girl's identity or path is you're going to get married, likely be engaged college time, and be popping out babies starting at like 21, 22. That was my identity. I dated someone all throughout college. We dated for 6 years, 4 years of college, 2 years after. In all scenarios, he should have been the one. We should have had our 10 kids and been riding off in the sunset by now. That didn't happen. Great guy, no ill feelings. I just knew deep down he wasn't the person for me. You know, that took a lot of time to admit to myself. It's not that I didn't want it to happen. I just wasn't ready for this guy to be that person. After I broke up with him, I felt a certain amount of failure. I became really depressed. My anxiety got worse. And I felt like I was failing at life. Going into my mid-20s, I haven't found this Prince Charming partner. Anybody listening, like if you have gone through that or you're going through it now, don't feel ashamed. There are more of us out there than you will ever realize. And you will find your tribe of people that can support you through those feelings. My greatest fear, committing to the wrong partner and then having a bad marriage or having to end in divorce. I feared that more than being single. After dating a lot of different people, almost got engaged another time. I'm so glad that didn't happen. I'm like laughing, it would have been miserable. I got closer to my 30s, Katie. I feared 30 on an unnatural level because me getting to 30 and being single, I basically felt like I signed my own death certificate. I'm an old maid and I'm washed up and I guess this is never happening for me. Babies aren't happening. Husband's not happening. How do I move on?
I think that feeling is something that most listeners will relate to. If you're not from the South, the number 30 might seem insane to you because for lots of women, that number is 40 or, you know, it's a different number, but the feeling is one I think many of us have dealt with for sure.
I turned 30. I didn't die. I wasn't as sad as I thought I was going to be, but I think because when I hit 30, I had done this work on myself through therapy, through just connecting and having more mature adult friendships, before I moved to Southern California, I was living in the Washington, D.C. area. I found an amazing tribe of women who were in the same boat as I was. They were in their 30s, mid-30s, 40s, not married. It was empowering to have so many smart, capable, ambitious women who got it. It helped me find my footing and feel less ashamed of the fact that I've reached this self-proclaimed milestone of being 30. Fast forward, so your listeners know I am 34. And so I hit my 33rd birthday. Could look back and be like, oh my God, I had such a fulfilled life. If I had been married or engaged or had kids when I wanted them, this life that I had built would never have happened. Mm-hmm. And I can't imagine who I would be as a person had I not had the experiences, good, bad, or indifferent, to get me to 33. Also had this realization at 33 that this is the last year I'm going to keep putting on myself. I'll do this when I find a partner, when I get married, when I find my husband, I'm going to do X, Y, Z. And I decided I can no longer sit back and wait to essentially start my life for someone who may not even show up. And that's a tough realization. I'm Christian. And the only reason why that matters in the context of this is you assume God's going to give you the desires of your heart because it's what you want. You want it to happen in your time, but everything's in God's will and God's time. And you believe that, but you're kind of on the fence because you're like, God, the way you're setting up my life doesn't look like this is going to happen. I had to get to the place where I made peace that while it would be nice to have a partner, my life will not end if I never get married. Mm-hmm. And if my life is not going to end because I'm not going to get married, what are the things that I know will fulfill me and make me happy if that area of my life is never fulfilled? And I realized, without a doubt, I would only be fulfilled if I was a mother. I could never get married. And while that would suck, I don't want anybody to think like, oh, I don't want to have a partner. I absolutely still do. But it's so low on the list of priorities right now. But being a mother was number one. I knew early on that I was going to have my own biological kids and that I was going to adopt. So I thought, okay, I'm not quite ready to be pregnant by myself. And that's only because I live 3,000 miles away from my family, but I know I want to adopt. And so you look into adoption and then you get sticker shock of how much it costs to adopt a child in this country. This is no knock to anybody who's chosen adoption at their path. I just was like, financially, I'm not ready. You know, I don't have that kind of money, like $25,000, $30,000.
How are you even finding, are you just Googling like adoption in your city, or how do you even begin to know where to look?
A lot of these private adoption websites will give you a range on there of how much it'll cost. Mm-hmm. And when you see, oh, it'll cost anywhere from $10,000 to $30,000 or $25,000 to $50,000. And you're like, wait, what? So clearly in America, you got to be super rich to get a child in need. That like fundamentally for me didn't make sense. And I was like, well, I know fostering is an option. So let me look into fostering more. What are foster options in the state of California? What's the process like? All of these different things. I had like looked and researched and then I put it on the back burner. A few months, get a new job. And I think it was like my first or second week at this new job, they had a foster to adoption panel at work. And it was employees that had gone through either private adoption or foster care through adoption or just fostered. And they had two social workers there too. So I heard my colleagues like talk about their experiences and the different paths. There was an LGBTQ couple there. There was a single father there. Couples, like it was really great to hear their experiences. I asked a ton of questions. I think there was a pretty good amount of people that came to listen, but I asked a ton of questions, Katie. And so afterwards, I kind of like lingered around because I was like, okay, let me talk to a social worker, like see how it is. And I was talking to these really great social workers and they're like, okay, so what's stopping you from doing this? And I'm like, well, I'm single and I've heard that being single, like you don't really get looked at. And they're like, false. Anybody is eligible. Like you can be single, you can be older. Like that has nothing to do with it. Next. And I was like, okay, well, I think my place might be too small. How many bedrooms? And I'm like, oh, I have two bedrooms. They're like, in the state of California, any kid under the age of 2 can sleep in the room with you. I mean, they have to have their own crib, of course. What age range are you thinking? I was like, oh, like 0 to 2, maybe 0 to 4. They're like, all right, next excuse. We're going to tell you now, because of where you work, you have financial security. You've been thoroughly vetted. Like, you are a prime candidate to be a foster parent. I went to see what the options were in Los Angeles County for fostering. LA County has the highest amount of kids in foster care in the nation. I think the last stat was like over 30,000 kids in LA County. One county, we're a big county, but 30,000 children are currently in foster care. That statistic blew my mind. I was like, and every child in LA County just needs to come to my house. We need to figure this out. Like, that whole big mama bear 10 kid thing went on a hyperdrive. So I'm looking at LA County, the DCFF's website, to see like, okay, what do you have to do in foster care? So some of the basic things that I think are very consistent no matter where you live is you have to be licensed. Every state will have different items that you need to do in the licensing process before you can have a placement. You have to get a background check. If you do have a criminal background history, it depends on what it is, you still might be eligible. Like, you had a DUI, but if that DUI was 10, 20 years ago and you haven't gotten in any trouble, then you could still more than likely be able to foster. So background check is one of them. Another thing is you have to take classes. Our requirements for classes and how many hours you need to take will vary by location. So the amount of hours you do it vary by if you're just fostering or fostering to adopt. So before I go on, I should give you guys the difference. So for me, I'm fostering to adopt. This means I'm licensed and my home is open for purely foster placements, right? And it could be for any amount of time. But I am also open to the fact that if a child is placed in my home and they become eligible for adoption, I want to and I can adopt them. So in their case plan, I would be the plan B. So if, you know, there's not reunification with the biological family members and no other biological relative comes forward and parental rights are terminated by the courts, they would say, Lindsay, do you want to adopt this child? And I would say yes. So for me, I think I had to do a little bit more classes, like a few more hours, but not by much, so that like I am certified and licensed to foster and adopt. I took around 14 or 15 hours worth of classes. So after you get the background check that gets cleared, after you do the classes, you get cleared, you have a home study. The home study isn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but still took a lot of preparation. Essentially, a home study is you get a list of things your home has to be prepared to look like and do for a social worker to come in and assess. They have this checklist. They don't make it a mystery, which is great. They tell you up front what needs to be done. They come and they make sure that you've complied with the list and they'll approve your home or disapprove and say, like, you need to do all these different things. Things in the home study, my friends that have kids are like, your home is the safest home. It's safer than my home because of everything I have. I have child locks everywhere. My friends come, they're like, I can't open your cabinets. I'm like, the child lock's there. So anything that says keep out of reach of children, which you would be surprised at the amount of products that say keep out of reach of children that you're like, seriously? Like, I grew up with lotion hanging out around the house or like hand soap. Anything that has on the label has to be placed up high and locked. So locked meaning baby proof, like lock cabinet.
I'm thinking I probably need to get this list because I know some of the, I'm like, okay, the cord to your blinds can't be hanging down and all of that stuff. But in my mind, I'm like, well, my baby's going to be here and he's not going to be mobile for another, you know, almost a year. So I'll think about that later. But now I'm like, I should probably Google it and get a hold of this list.
I'll send you my list. I mean, I know people that have mobile kids that they don't do these things.
Right.
So any knives, I can't have knives down, even butter knives. They have to be up high and locked. Matches, scissors, up high and locked.
And I know they do the home study prior to you being approved. Do they come back, like, now that you have a foster child in your care, are they making sure that you're maintaining all of that?
Yes.
Or, okay. Yes. Interesting.
Every 3 months, a social worker comes. I was super nervous before my first home visit. It was so easy, but I was still really nervous. It's invasive, I won't lie. They go through every single drawer. Nothing's hidden during this process. Since LA County has so many kids in foster care, they outsource to foster family agencies. So a foster family agency is the foster to adoption agency that basically is contracted with the county to help take on the caseload, because there's too many kids in LA County that, you know, just DCFS social workers can take on. So they distribute them out to different foster family agencies in the area. The difference between going through a foster family agency to get a license to foster and adopt versus going straight through the county. So those are the two avenues you can do it. The two differences are, if you go through the county, you're kind of doing a lot on your own. So you still have to do the classes, you should do all these different things. And there's someone that kind of helped you, but you're responsible for finding all the classes. You're responsible for like lining up a lot of the things. Whereas with the foster family agency, I like to call it, I'm being coddled and babysat, and I'm totally fine with that because.
Because how else do you know? I mean, that's a lot of work, and you're working full time, and you still have the rest of your life. And then this sounds like more than a part-time job to figure all this out.
Oh, it's like a double full-time job. Mm-hmm. And so I went with a foster family agency. They've been amazing. So with that, you get added support. I started my licensing process. I filled out all the applications, regardless of if it's a foster family agency or the county, you have to fill an application. So it's not like, oh, I'm going to go sign up tomorrow. You have to apply and they have to approve you to even begin the licensing process. Mm-hmm. So I filled out the application and got interviewed, and they ask you really personal questions. They approved me in like December of 2019. Then I began my licensing process in 2020. Once you got approved, the application, like the stack of paperwork you had to fill out and sign, is pretty ridiculous, I will not lie. And that took a few months on its own to get through all of that paperwork. Mm-hmm. A lot of it's like, okay, you have to have a home safety plan and line that out. And this is all before somebody comes and does your home visit. You have to have a home safety plan. They want to know what kind of support that you have. So I had to like talk to my friends when I made this decision, like who here in California is going to help and support me, because if something happens, I got to have a name to mm-hmm. give these people, right? And making sure you had friends along the journey to do this.
Right. Did you immediately tell your family and your friends? Were you doing this all on your own? Did you have a lot of support like in the preparing stage? What did that look like?
I'm very close with my family, and I wasn't sure how they were going to take it. I was driving to work one morning and I called my mom. I kind of like dropped it on her, and I was expecting her to be like, absolutely not. This is ridiculous. You don't have support. Exact opposite, Katie. I was expecting like, no, no, no. And her giving me a laundry list of the reasons why this is a bad idea. She's like, this is great. I support it. She's like, there are so many kids out there that need to be loved, and I know how badly you want to be a mom. This is great. Yes, 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 yes. And I was like, oh, that's amazing. So I was like, okay, mom's on board. Everybody's on board. My sister originally not on board. Her initial reaction was like, no, I don't know how you think you can love someone else's child. No, 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 no. Dad, pause. No. I'm like, you two are the ones I thought would be most okay with it. And my dad's reasons for no weren't because he didn't think I'm capable of doing it. I travel quite a bit. So my dad was like, well, what are you going to do with this kid when you travel? All the practical things that I should be thinking about. I'm just thinking about, I finally get to be a mom. Tell my godmother, yes, I think that's beautiful. Then I kind of got a butt from her. What happens if you don't get to keep the baby? Have you thought about that? You know, all of the practical things that I thought about, but very much had the attitude, which is very unlike me, I'll deal with it when it comes. Mm-hmm. Because I'm usually like, I need to be in control of this so that my anxiety doesn't go awry. I need to be in control of everything. And when you're an anxious person and your anxiety is fueled by lack of control, this is the most ridiculous thing I could choose for myself, because you're literally not in control of anything. Long story short, everybody's currently on board. They kind of had to be. Friend-wise, all of my friends have been supportive. There's not hadn't been a single friend that I told about it beforehand that was like, are you sure? Everybody's like, yes, this is awesome. This makes sense. So I had friend support, family support from the get-go, which when you're going through this application process and getting licensed, they have several one-on-one conversations with you to make sure that you have that support, because this fostering is tough. Mm-hmm. I live every single day not knowing this child that I love and care for so much, if he'll leave. You have to be able to have people that can emotionally support you, physically support you. I have friends here in California who help me out. I encourage anyone who's, even if it's not foster and adoption, you're thinking about biologically having your kid on your own, make sure you're open with the people that you currently feel are your support system. Mm-hmm. And if their reaction isn't gung ho ho hum, don't want to deter you. They might just need a minute to accept it. But mm-hmm. having that level of support, whether it's friends, family, you name it, is incredibly important to being a solo parent.
And I think it's something that you can also grow and develop intentionally
mm-hmm.
if you find that you don't have it automatically. Those are kind of two themes that I've seen in talking with so many women about their process is what you said about the family support. I've kind of learned that lots of families are skeptical of a hypothetical child and super supportive of the actual kid when he gets there.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Right. And then also just the idea that you may not currently know the people who are going to support you the most. And I found that with my pregnancy that friends who were more kind of on the periphery have really stepped in, and I'm realizing, oh, these are going to be the friends that I call when I just need somebody to, like, you know, come over and hold my baby while I take a shower. And a year ago, they wouldn't have necessarily been the names that popped to mind. And then
yeah.
friends that have kids already, but their kids are older, and I'm realizing, oh, they kind of think an infant is a drag. And so we're probably not going to hang out that much.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I think it's really important to be aware that that's a necessary part, but also to not be discouraged if you can't automatically name who those people are, because you can always grow it, you know, as long as you're intentional.
Absolutely. That is absolutely right. Having that support is really great. Fast forward the process, classes, all these things. They tell you about trauma. They tell you about signs of trauma. They tell you, they're all really scary things. The trauma days that we had class, I was depressed the rest of the day. You're learning about, you could have a placement that has fetal alcohol syndrome. And what does that look like? You could have a child come into your home that was sexually abused or really beaten. What does that look like? You could have a child that's born addicted to drugs and they're detoxing off of drugs for months. How do you care for that child? What are the signs you need to see? What are some of the long-term effects, right? Like, even if a child is not physically or sexually abused or may not be born with drugs in their system, but they could be drug exposed. There's one set of trauma of a child being removed from their home, the mm-hmm. child being removed from their biological parents, right? That's one thing. Then they're placed with a complete stranger they don't know. That's another trauma. Then if they are reunified with their parents, these cases can drag out for 2-3 years. Mm-hmm. So you could have a kid in your home for 2 or 3 years. And then they go back to biological family members that, yeah, they have visits with a few times a week, but they've developed a relationship with you as the foster parent.
Right.
And then there's another trauma when they leave your home. So it's kind of learning how to just be cognizant, have all your spidey senses on. A lot of time older kids, when they're detained, they are very quiet and don't tell you all the pieces to the puzzle. And you find out things about them as they get comfortable with you that social workers may not have known about the case. So that adds on other layers of complexity with it. So the classes just really go over the types of cases you could get, the foster care system, what that looks like, what going to court looks like, the parties it involves. So you get like this high level overview, fire hose inundation of everything.
Did it ever deter you at all? Like, did any of this just feel like more than you could take on as a single woman? How did you?
I'm laughing because the answer is no. I think anyone who doesn't have a core desire to be a mother, doesn't have a core desire or feel a calling to help the fatherless and the orphans, it would be really overwhelming. To this deep level, I knew I'm supposed to be doing it. So I was like, this is really sad. All I kept thinking is, I want every child into my home. Okay, can we hurry this up? And can you give me like 10 placements? My foster agency only allows you one placement in your first year. So.
I just think it's so beautiful, the clarity that you've had in this. And I think probably, and I'd love to talk more with you about this at some point too, that you've mentioned your faith. And I think that that maybe is a part of just feeling led or connected to this particular way of becoming a mom. I began to pursue this avenue as well myself, which is one of the reasons I wanted to talk about this on the show, because I don't think I've ever mentioned it before, but I did go to just that initial meeting, probably kind of similar to the one that you mentioned at work, where it's just sort of a panel and people are talking about their experiences and it's no commitment, you know, it's just sort of an information session. And the first time I went, I didn't even make it into the building. Like, I pulled into the parking lot and I was just like, I'm feeling overwhelmed. I don't think I can go in. And there was a monthly meeting. And so then the next month I went again, or maybe it was a couple months later, and sat through the meeting. But I just kept feeling like if I had a partner, I would be so on board with this. Like, I want to do this. This is so beautiful and so meaningful. And I can't think of anything better that we could do for our fellow humans. And I just don't know if I can do it. And I felt so guilty about that, but it just didn't feel like something I could do on my own. So I'm just really in awe, because I do think part of it is, you know, who you are as a person and your ambition and the love that you have in your heart. But I also do think that you've been called to this in a way that not everybody is.
Absolutely.
That clarity that you have, it's just, you know, it makes me emotional to think about it, because it's just so, so beautiful.
And I appreciate you just allowing me to share this story and just being vulnerable and open about it, because I only envision doing this with a partner after all of my 10 kids are old enough where they don't need me to smother them in love and they're like gone off. I was like, that's when I'll start fostering and I'll adopt 10 more. The more the merrier. I'll be like the little lady who lived in a shoe. Like, I'm going to have all these kids. That was my thought. And it was really getting to that point of, I want to be a mother no matter what. And that is my core calling in this life, is to be a mother. How do I make that happen? Right. And I think that drive and just that core feeling I've always felt helped make this feel like a right option for me, because it's not for everybody. And I can tell you that living in it and currently having a placement, it's the hardest thing I've ever done. Mm-hmm. And I have had many times where I've cried. I'm like, I don't think that I'm capable of doing this. I don't know why God called me to do this. But there's just such an incredible amount of strength that happens when you're walking in your purpose and when you're doing what you're destined and you're supposed to be doing, no matter how you come about being a mother, and you will be given the tools from a deeper place you didn't know that you had. So that's the one awesome thing. And so all in all, it took me about 4 months total to get licensed, from applying, get approved, classes, CPR, which is pretty quick considering COVID, and then having the home study. So my classes started at end of February, March, and then I had more paperwork to fill out. You also have to get medical clearance from a doctor, has to sign off basically that you're healthy enough to like take care of another person. My home study wasn't until the end of July. So the day I had my home study, I got approved, and then I waited. You're all in a high. I'm telling you, I'm like, when's this baby coming? I was ready. I had the blankets. I had clothes. I had a crib. I was ready for this kid to come. Another myth with foster care is that people think that kind of get what you get and you don't have any choice in it. That's absolutely not true. I am totally in control of the type of placement I have. For me, I chose age ranges 0 to 2 years old. I didn't care about ethnicity or gender. You can be as picky or not as picky. Just know the more you narrow down your choices, it's going to be longer till you get a placement to fit that specific idea that you have. The only thing I cared about is that I knew by myself I couldn't be able to take care of a child that was medically fragile, that needed around the clock care, because I do work full time. Right. That was my only thing. I would need help, and it would be a disservice of that child to come into my home, because I wouldn't be able to give them the level of care that they need.
That makes sense. So July, you got approved, and then when did you actually get your placement?
So my first placement, it was mid-August. He was a baby boy. He was 4 months when he came to me. It's funny, that day I got placed with him, early in the day I got a call for a baby girl, and I was so excited. She was 4 months old too. And this is my first ever time getting a placement call. So I got a call, and then 10 minutes later I get a text. Never mind, she's being placed with family. It's like, oh, I was so defeated. And my social worker is like, the day is still young. It's not over. And I'm like, okay, well, she was right. About 10, 11 o'clock that same night, I get a call for an emergency placement for a little boy. In this situation, an emergency placement is a kid that will only be in your home for a very short amount of time. Mm-hmm. So I had this first placement for 36 hours total. He was super short. The social worker brought him over. It was like midnight, literally two signatures, basically to say the county is releasing this child to me to care for. She literally looked at me and said, good luck, and left. And this baby's looking at me and I'm looking at the baby and I was like, oh crap. What did I do? I'm not ready for this. How is she?
And you have like work the next day and what, like you've made no plans. Like how did you manage?
None. And I had a huge, huge like presentation that was in front of the whole entire company.
Goodness. And I'm even thinking like what's in your fridge right now? Like
nothing. Katie, when I say I was not prepared, I wasn't prepared. He came with a diaper bag that had two diapers and like one extra pair of clothes. Thank God I binge shopped and went crazy. And then I also along the way have had people donate clothes to me. How did I not have bottles or any formula? I had nothing. So my neighbor came over and I was like, you have to watch him. And oh, by the way, I didn't have a car seat. It was one of those things where I kept meaning to get and didn't get yet. So it's not like I could have taken him with me to the store because right. I didn't have a car seat.
Well, and there's a huge difference between a 4 month old and a 1.5 year old. Like, yeah. How would you even know what size or what type of car seat to get? This is very overwhelming.
Don't be overwhelmed. They make an all-in-one car seat. Most of them start at 4 pounds so that it can be rear facing all the way up to like their 5. So you can get an all-in-one car seat. That's what I ended up getting after this fiasco. But neighbor came and watched him. Thankfully found a grocery store that didn't close till 2 a.m. It's like 12:30 and I'm like running around in the grocery store to get formula and bottles and diapers and wipes because I had none of those things. And diapers are hard because when you have a range of age, you don't know what size is appropriate to get. And I don't have the kind of space to like have just every size diaper.
Right.
So run to the store. I had made sure to ask the social worker what type of formula he's on because you know he's 4 months, he's clearly used to something. This poor kid had severe reflux, so he's on a special formula that thank God Bonds had. I buy all this stuff and I don't know how long he's staying, so I didn't want to be like, I'll get enough for like a day and then you end up being here for 5 days,
right? Like, but you also don't want to spend half your paycheck on the next 6 weeks and then he's gone tomorrow.
Correct. So I get enough stuff that I'm like, okay, if you're here a week, you'll be here. And so for someone who's just in a new situation with someone that they don't know, he never was stranger danger. He wasn't in shock the way I thought he would be. So we get through the night. Next day came. I had this presentation where as soon as I got approved, I made sure my leadership knew, my coworkers and my immediate team knew that this was something that I was doing. And kind of like any minute, any day, I could pop up and be like, I have a baby. And
right.
So like,
that was smart because that would have been a lot of explaining if you were just like, hey, right. I'm going to be a little late to the meeting because I had a baby last night.
Right. And you're like, what? Like, what happened during this pandemic? How did we not know? So I got their support very early on, worked through me a baby shower, like for aww. Like a foster shower to give me stuff. So super supportive. So they were on board. I did this call like with no sleep. But, you know, my neighbor watched him and then him and I just soaked in the moment. I prayed over him. He was just amazing. And when this kid left, social worker put him in the car seat. She's like, do you want to walk us out? And I didn't really want to because I didn't want to cry.
Mm-hmm.
But I walked them out and this little sweet face, he looked directly at me and I was like, you be a good boy. I love you. And the smile he gave me was this knowing, telling smile of thank you. I know what you did for me. Like even the social worker was like, oh my God, did you see that? I was like, yeah, I did. And my heart broke into tiny pieces, but I knew he wasn't my forever. He came and left and then the waiting continues. And that's the hardest part is the waiting. So fast forward to the end of September, I'm on a work call. I see social worker's name popped up. They're like, okay, we have a baby boy. He's this race. He's in the hospital. He was just born 2 days ago. Do you want him?
Oh my goodness.
Without hesitation, I said yes, without asking all of the questions. Now, for any of you that are considering fostering, you Google it. There are a list of questions that other foster parents so graciously kind of tell you to ask up front.
And you asked none of them. I love that.
Well, I did. And of course, they didn't have all the information, but like my heart gets ahead of my head. I was like, yes. And I was like, oh, wait. Has he been drug exposed? What's the reason for the detainment? Is he healthy? All these different things. And so I get the answer to that. And they're like, you still want him? I'm like, yes, of course. And so she's like, okay, well, let me like call you back, make sure that he's going to come place with you. So she contacts me like an hour later and she's like, okay, congratulations. It's a boy. I'm like, okay, like, is social worker going to bring the baby to me? She's like, no, can you go get him from the hospital? I'm like, what? So I call my best friend. I was like, we're having a baby right now.
I'm in labor. It's like,
right? It's pretty much just like, come up right now. We're getting a baby. And she's like, what? So she flew over here. Thankfully, she was close. She walks in. She's like, where's the baby? I was like, we got to go get the baby. She goes, wait, what do you mean we have to get the baby? I'm like, we have to go to the hospital. We got to pick him up from the hospital. So back to the car seat. It's like, I got to have a car seat. So I get this all in one car seat and I'm staring at this car seat in the nursery. I was like, I should probably get a new car seat, shouldn't I? Because all along she kept telling me, if you get a newborn, you're going to want to get an infant car seat because you're going to want to have something. If the baby's sleeping, you can click out and take with you and all the stuff. And I was like, nah, it'll be fine. I'll just baby wear them. Like, it'll be fine. Girl, Katie, 11th hour. I'm like, we got to get a new car seat, don't we? And she's like, I told you. We go to Target. I'm pacing up and down the aisles like, you know, you see in movies, those frantic dads that don't know what to do and they kind of seem worthless and they're just freaking out. Like, I forgot the camera. I forgot this, right? You're like, grab the diaper bag. I was like that frantic dad in there buying diapers because I didn't have diapers. Because again, I don't know what age kid I'm getting. I did have bottles. I did not get formula because I didn't know what they were giving him in the hospital, if he had even taken formula. So we're just buying a lot of different things. Like a typical Target run baby edition. A very Target fashion $600-$800 later. Don't ask where all this money is coming from. I'm like, we just have to get it. We go to the hospital. My heart's racing. I'm so excited. New mom jitters. Take the car seat in. I go upstairs and I go into the room and the nurses had him in a separate exam room and the clear case. This sweet little baby, it was like 6 pounds, 5 ounces. Aww. Just, I was just like, this is happening. I've prayed for this moment for 34 years. I'm a mom. Like, this kid's going to be with me. I don't know for how long, but this kid is coming home with me. And the nurses were so sweet. They're like, hi, mom. I'm like, oh, I'm just his foster mom. And people look at me, they're like, you're his mother. So I almost downplay my role. I don't anymore, but in the beginning I did. So the nurses were like, mom, have you seen him yet? I was like, no. And they're like, oh my God, get in here. Look at him. He was, oh my God, so precious. The nurses were great. They gave me like over a week's worth of formula and other stuff. So they gave me wipes, diapers, lots of formula, all this stuff. So we leave the hospital. I'm like, okay, we're leaving. Somebody has to walk out with me so that people don't think I hijacked a baby because I very much do not look like I'm pregnant. So they walk me out. My friend Christine and I get him in the car. We get home, take him out. We're marveling over him. And then I was like, crap, now what? I've been around a lot of kids and babies before. I've never had to take care of a newborn by myself. Y'all, I'm talking fresh out of the womb, newborn. My friend leaves. We get through our first night. You know, he's crying, very much a newborn. I'm like, I don't really know what I'm doing. But fast forward, he's now 4 months old, very strong, very healthy. I can't, unfortunately, like, give you details of the case. He's still here. My hope is that I will be able to adopt him. There are some things that might not make that happen, but I'm just praying a way is made that we can do that. But oh my gosh, Katie, when I say I'm madly in love, like, you don't truly understand love and love at first sight until you look into a baby's face. I can only imagine the love that you'll feel, Katie, because you've had your child in your body for 9 months and you know so many idiosyncrasies about him. You'll know those flutter kicks and certain things that you ate or did. Like, you have this internal connection, right? That can never be taken away. And for me, I really am surprised at how quickly him and I bonded, considering I pick him up from the hospital and he's never heard my voice, doesn't know my smell, and has never acted like he doesn't. And And it's, you know, such a beautiful thing.
That is beautiful. And I'm about to get a little woo-woo. but I really believe in the spiritual connection between babies and mothers. I'm all hormonal over here, so I'm probably going to cry. But I went through a period of time where becoming a mom just always felt so far away, and it was very hypothetical. And then I got to a place where I was trying to conceive out of fear and scarcity. I really wasn't ready, and I wasn't emotionally in the game. It was more just, I had doctors and kind of messages making me really scared that I was going to miss the boat. And I did get pregnant during that time, but I miscarried very early, and I never really felt attached to that pregnancy. But somewhere between that miscarriage and this pregnancy, I felt a connection long before I was pregnant with who I now know is my son. And it was always him. There was a point where it went from a hypothetical to a, this is my baby. I think it doesn't surprise me to hear you talk about that love, because I do think that connection between the two of you was probably there before you went frantically into the hospital with all the, you know, like the new dad with the car seat and the, you know,
right.
That it was just predestined, you know, and that for however long you are physically with him, that God or the universe or, you know, the powers that be, like, it was not a surprise to the universe that this child was winding up with you that day and will be with you for however long is, you know, in the plan. I mean, all that to say, it doesn't surprise me that you felt that way.
And it's interesting that you bring up that spiritual connection with children and moms, whether, like you said, biologically or through adoption. The night before he was born, my mom had a dream, and in the dream, she had a baby. And she said, God was in her dream. And she goes, whose baby is this? And he goes, it's Lindsay's. You need to give her the baby. And my mom's like, okay. And she said, she handed me the baby, and she woke up and she's like, that was such a strange dream. It was so lifelike. And she did not tell me right away. So she had that, he was born on a Sunday. So she had that dream Saturday night going into a Sunday. She waited like 2 days to tell me about this dream. And then I got the call about him, and he happened to have been born the day that she had the dream.
Wow.
Which I'm like, wow, like talk about a connection. Having him and taking on this full-time mother role, I am so fulfilled beyond what I could ever imagine being fulfilled in my life. And that doesn't include a man. And so I'm shocked by myself that the level of fulfillment that I have, that it doesn't include a partner. Again, I still would love to have a partner. Mm-hmm. I'm not negating that, but I never imagined the fullness I would feel in my life of stepping into that role of a mother without having a partner.
Mm-hmm. I think that that's part of just stepping into the story that is yours. I mean, I have these moments now where I can feel my baby kicking and moving now. And I have these moments where I will just be laying there and my dog is next to me and my baby's kicking. And I just, the word family just comes to me and I'll be in tears because I just feel so full and just so, like, this is everything that I want and everything that I need. And that desire for a partner hasn't gone away, but I almost feel like not now. Like, I don't really want anything to disrupt this because I feel so good where I am. And oh my goodness, if you had told me a year ago that this was not going to be a consolation prize, you know, that it was going to be enough just to have a dog and a baby, like that was going to be enough. It does feel very, very right. And I think there's this element of faith of just like stepping into it, and you can't be sure that it's going to be enough until you're there. But then once you're there, you're like, oh, okay.
Exactly. And it's one of those things like, oh, is this what I thought having a partner and being married was going to feel like? And I don't know that it would even feel the same. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, you know, having lots of married friends have been married for a minute, because remember, we got married in the 20s. And some of them have beautiful relationships. Some of them, unfortunately, do not. But I see how much their relationships don't really seem to have the same fulfilling feeling as I feel with being a mother.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's just so pure. Your expectation for your child just has to be different. You know, when your baby is like crying longer than you thought they should, or you know, you're not like, oh, you're such an asshole. You know, you just, you roll with it. Like, you know that that's what babies are supposed to do. Whereas with a partner, I think there's so much work to not feel resentful, which I think is one of the beautiful things about relationship, is that they do cause you to work on yourself And you do have to kind of hold up a mirror when you're like super resentful or annoyed or whatever and be like, okay, how much of this is me? Right. And so there's a lot of effort, even in the best relationships. And it just feels so peaceful to think, and later I'll want to do that. Later, that will be something that feels really fulfilling and exciting to me. But right now, it's just pure, you know, just to love a little person who is totally reliant on you and not to have that negotiation of someone else thinking you're holding him too much or don't hold the bottle that way or he should be swaddled or he shouldn't be swaddled or, you know, all the things. Just kind of thankful that I'm doing it by myself.
Oh, absolutely. I think about that too. Like there would be times where I think when I really just want to shower, because I don't remember when the last time I showered and he's crying and there's stuff everywhere. I'm like, it would be really great to have a partner. And then I think about the emotional capacity limit I feel a lot of times. I think, oh, it would be great to have someone to carry the load. But then I think the trade-off with having a partner here to carry the load with me is that I'm going to have to carry their load of their emotions, their thoughts, their feelings. And the thought of having to do that, I'm like, nah, I'm good.
Right. Right. Because you have to invest in that relationship and you know, hopefully you'd want to, but it's another role to take on at the same time as all of the other roles you're juggling. And to me, it feels so good to think later.
Again, like I occasionally, when I have the time to think about something other than a baby, which is rare, I'm like, oh man, like I do still genuinely want romantic love and to maybe get married one day. It's oddly taken a backseat. And the reason why I say oddly is I've spent most of my life obsessing and trying to control that outcome, that I've never lived in this space for this long with not thinking and feeling and wanting and desiring it. At this stage in my life, there is going to take a very high caliber of a man to come into my life, because I'm literally doing everything society has said that I need to have a man for by myself.
Right.
I am renting my own place. I have my own bank account. I have a really great job. I get paid really well. I am raising a child by myself. All of these things that you're kind of conditioned to think that you need a partner for, I'm literally doing them by myself. So any man that were to come into our lives would have to add a tremendous amount of value.
The longer I'm single, the higher the bar is raised, rather than me being closer to just like, oh, I'll take any old guy, you know, because exactly. I know, like, if I wanted to be married, for sure, I could be married, I wouldn't be happy, but I could find a man that, you know, was, we could have gone the way that society told us was the safe expected route. And that I think is the biggest surprise to me, that I think my perception of women who wound up single in their childbearing years and doing it on their own had failed in some way, or like just didn't have what it took to find that partner. And what I've realized through connecting with so many women is it's the exact opposite. All of us could have settled and we didn't. Like, we made the choice to keep our standards high and wait for the right thing instead of allowing fear to drive something that was going to be mildly fulfilling to disastrous, you know, somewhere on that scale.
Exactly. And I'm so grateful and thankful that even at the times in my most desperate flurry of something in me was like, no, Lynn, just wait for the right person. I could be married if I wanted to be married now. Mm-hmm. I would be extremely unhappy. I would rather be single than be in a miserable relationship and then have kids in that equation. Now, my placement, my future children will have the best parts of me to be their mother and can always look and be like, my mom was so happy. She was so confident. We had everything that we needed.
Right. And that's one of those things. I do feel like we often get lumped into demographics of just single moms in general. And I think it is really important to look at the difference. The way you just described yourself is like 100% accurate for where you are. But when someone hears single mom, that's not what they imagine. You know, they imagine more of a victim-y, that it happened to you and poor you. And I just had this experience the other day. I was selling some things Facebook Marketplace and this woman came to pick it up and she was asking about my pregnancy. And I said something about, I think she mentioned a partner or a husband or something. And I said, oh no, actually I'm doing it on my own. And her face, and she, you know, she's wearing a mask, so I'm only seeing the top half of her face, but
yeah,
she was just like, oh, I'm sorry. And I was like, oh no, actually it was my choice. Like I decided to get pregnant on my own. And you could see that she was very confused by that, but it did change. I think all of a sudden she didn't feel sorry for me anymore because it was obvious that it was on purpose. Yeah. I think there's a lot of work to be done for sure in perceptions of single mothers, but you know, there are, just like any other demographic, there are all different kinds of single moms. And it is different for us because we prepared and chose and we're not victims.
Exactly. And you hit a really important piece of that puzzle that I love that you're doing this podcast. And we get the chance to reclaim what a single mother is. Mm-hmm. Because you're right. Before I even chose this route, when I think a single mother, oh, you got knocked up, you didn't really want it, or oh, you can't make it on your own. Like, you just get this negative connotation. And like, no. The 21st century version of single mothers in our demographic, we have everything that we need to have to be happy, healthy, and successful. And we want to parent in that light. And we don't need to have a partner just to go and do that.
Mm-hmm.
Never be too proud to have help. We've yes. done it all by ourselves for so long. So I get the innate need. We're just going to do it all. But it's okay mm-hmm. to be like, you know what? I need to outsource some help.
Mm-hmm.
I just decided, by the time it's the end of the week and I've taken care of him, I've worked full time and I have to clean and do all these loads of laundry, I decided, you know what? I'm going to have to find a housekeeper to help me out.
Mm-hmm.
She came this week. I literally like teared up because to watch her fold two huge loads of laundry and just do things that were so easy before for me, but no, like I had that help. My mm-hmm. friend Christine, when she comes over, or I go to her house, stay over there for a few hours, and I can just mentally not feel like I have this huge load on me. Like that's right. important to give yourself that time and being a single parent. If you don't live near family and friends and you can't do it, look into finding a good babysitter or caregiver. Don't feel bad if you need to have a babysitter during the day so you can just go to Target and like space out.
Mm-hmm.
Call on your family and friends to help you for support. Try to get that support system locked in ahead of time. But if you don't, I've joined plenty of Facebook groups with people like me. You can meet new friends. Having that support system is what allows this to be manageable and for me to enjoy being a mother to my child.
Mm-hmm. I do want to start to kind of wrap up with you, but you're answering exactly what I wanted to ask you, which is, you know, what advice would you have? You've just given like loads of wonderful wisdom for motherhood in general. Is there anything specifically about this route of foster to adopt that you would want to make sure that people know or hear before we go?
Absolutely. I would say first and foremost, just do it. If it's something that you feel like you want to do, look into it, make sure it's the best decision for you. Don't be scared off by other people's experiences with the foster care system. It is a very broken system. It is, but just know that your role in that child's life, whether it was my first placement for 36 hours or now going on 4 months to maybe forever with my current placement or the many other kids I'll have after him, just know the difference that you're making in this child's life. You're going to be teaching them bonding skills. You're going to be mm-hmm. teaching them relationship skills. You're going to teach them what love and security feels like. And even at 0 years old, that's felt. You're going to heal kids in situations that might not get it. So it's worth looking into. Ask all of the questions. Figure out what your county does. Try to connect with other foster parents to see what it is. But just take the leap of faith and do it. It has by far been the most rewarding decision I've ever made in my life. Again, make sure you have a support system. Just make sure you have people and things and arrangements to help make sure that you are able to take care of yourself. My mom has to remind me of that a lot. I have to be healthy and strong so that I can be a good mom. So mm-hmm. just remember that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you so much. You've given us so much good stuff to think about. I feel like I could talk to you all day and maybe we'll have to have you come back for more. So if people do want to connect with you, do you want to share ways that they can do that?
Absolutely. So if any of you have any questions, you can contact me at llamafostermama@gmail.com. And it's llama like the animal, LLAMA, LLAMA, FOS. terrommomma @gmail.com. And I'm happy to connect with you. And you can also follow me on my foster Instagram handle, which is my so-called foster life. Feel free to reach out on either of those avenues and I'd be happy to chat with you.
Awesome. Love that. I'll put those in the show notes so people can scroll down and find them. And thank you so much for sharing your story.
Thank you, Katie. Good luck on your journey with motherhood. I know the time is winding down, but thank you for this podcast and thank you for just the avenue to help other solo moms be able to connect. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for joining me for this episode of the Single Greatest Choice podcast. I'm your host, Katie V. You can learn more about me, this podcast, and the Single Greatest Choice coaching at my website, www.singlegreatestchoice.com, or find me on Instagram at single_greatest_choice. If you enjoyed today's episode, please take a minute to rate and review in iTunes. That helps more women to find our show. Until next time, I'm sending you all of my love and support as you go about making the choices that will create a life you love.